Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
And only on October 26, 2017.
That's right, a hot October 26th.
It is. Oh, what the heck is going on with this weather?
I didn't flip the switch.
I mean, it's why people move to California.
Yeah.
But, you know, give us a little fall.
Yeah, that's right. I tell you, they asked, you know, what are you giving the kids out for Halloween? And somebody said heat stroke. So it's going to be a rough one, man. All those kids in big woolly costumes.
Oh, my goodness.
Chocolate ice cube.
That's right. That would be great. That's a good idea.
You know, I don't really mind it. I just kind of, you know, wait for it. And then when it's obviously not going to come as soon as we like, then I have to move on. But the only time I do mind it during the year is if it's like this at Christmas time.
Right.
Yeah. It's so hard to enjoy Christmas in LA if, in fact, it's
exactly
brutally hot. Yeah. Here, right? Michael pays people to stand outside his window and just shake snowflakes down so he can pretend like it's snowing. So, well, turn on the air conditioning as high as you can.
I can almost see my house. I'm at the top of the hills. We were evacuated
A
couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
really?
Party at your house after the show, though.
Wow.
That must have been scary.
Yeah,
scary.
When the fire rolled over the top hill, it was really frightening. My wife and one of my daughters were in Venice at the time, Venice, Italy. And we were on the phone with them, and they were scared worse than we were because they saw the fire like close out of there. And then we saw it roll over the hill, and I got my other two kids and two dogs and got in my
flew.
Jeep. We got out. And the handle on the Jeep was so hot, I had to use a cloth to...
Oh, really? My goodness, wow.
Everything was so hot.
Wow. Good Lord, but everything turned out okay?
We were okay. Our pool looked like an ash fest and took a while to clean out. And it just got bad again yesterday from the winds because all the ash came back up and it was just covered again there and all.
But well, we're glad you're back and safe and here with us today. That's a great thing.
Absolutely.
Michael, who are these two gentlemen sitting
to
my right here?
I think we should tell everybody. It's like we know.
Let's introduce
our audience.
That's right.
So it has been a hot one, as we said, indeed, and we are going to follow suit today with a hot show and two incredibly talented performers whose careers are on fire. Isn't that funny that we're talking about?
That's right.
As if please welcome you. Mark Blanchard and Robert Yacko.
Yeah.
Hey. Hi, everybody out there.
There you go.
Welcome, guys.
Yes. Applause.
The audience loves you. What can I say, man? So glad to have you both. We're glad you're safe. We're glad you survived the weather. Everybody doing well?
Yes.
Good.
Very well.
Good, good. Excited about a couple shows we're going to talk about, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So some good things going on. But, Michael, before we do that, we need to go ahead and thank our sponsors, yeah?
We do indeed. We would like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
We are indeed.
What an audience you guys have.
That's right.
Bus them in from Pacoima. There you go. But we encourage you, ladies and gentlemen, to visit Breakdown Services and Performing Arts Live to find out more about all of the happenings in the South Island.
That's right. Obviously, two great resources, Michael. And,
yep.
And to be sure, we're speaking of great things. We got great shows coming up, great resources. Anything great in your past week?
In my past week, anything great?
Theatrically speaking, perhaps? Did you see any shows?
You know, I was set to go see a show, and because of my condition, I have a lower back condition that I've talked about on the show before, so it's not a surprise, but... one of my discs is squeezing the sciatic nerve on the right side of my body.
I hate it
and
when
it
that
has two
actually,
because
even it's more painful than it sounds.
It's been 2 months, and ooh. I have been to the doctor. We're trying to do everything. Did an MRI finally last Friday because I am on top of that claustrophobic. So
yeah.
And
even if you're not claustrophobic,
right.
An MRI
yes,
can make
so
you.
True. But so I did my homework and I found one of two units in all of Southern California that are completely open.
Oh, nice.
And you actually stand up and or sit down. And it's you're kind of at the top of a V. And it took 15 minutes. Mm. And I was a little high because that's what they suggest, that you take a Valium or a Xanax. Or I ended up taking something.
I thought you were going to say I ended up naked, which would have been much more interesting.
Taking it on Valium.
For the techs, yeah.
I suppose to the MRI it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, they don't care. They don't care. Although one of those,
when you say open MRI, this wasn't a guy with a van and a camera saying he was. Okay, good.
Not this time.
Okay, good. We're safe. So was that successful? Did they get some good information?
We'll know on October 30th. I have to go back now to the surgeon at the Southern California Orthopedic Institute and have that discussion with him. He is not necessarily pro-surgery, but and nor am I, certainly. And I am starting orthopedic physical therapy this coming week. So.
Which hopefully we'll have good
results. I'm on top
results.
Of it. I do other exercises.
That's the end of your rollerblading career.
Really. I won't do Starlight Express ever again.
That's right. Ugh. Well, I tell you, that's obviously a big step forward with the MRI being done. Hopefully some good information comes. Hopefully all treats and no tricks come.
Thank you, Andrew, for asking. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad things are going okay. Shall we bring in the fine-looking gentleman to my right?
I think we should.
Let's do it. Our first guest nurtured his interest in directing at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York. He moved to a prestigious film directing program at Hofstra University, where he also played football and baseball, as well as studied USC Film School and AFI.
In New York City, he directed productions of A Midsummer Night's Dream with Long Island Shakespeare Festival, Middle of the Night with HB Studios, The Rhymers of Eldritch, I hope I'm saying that correctly.
Yes, you are.
Waiting for Lefty and Buried Child.
In Los Angeles, he directed the West Coast premiere of Arthur Miller's Memory of Two Mondays, for which he won the Drama Log Award, as well as an LA Drama Desk nomination. He took home the Drama Log Award and Drama Desk nominations as well for the premiere of One Last Ride at the Court Theater, as well as True West at the Palm Canyon Theater.
Other notable credits include Cody Angelimo in Coming, is Coming, excuse me, Cody Angel Limo.
Angelino.
It's misspelled. Thank you, Ro.
Angelimo, no M.
Cody Angelino is Coming. True West, It's Just Sex, which won the People's Choice Award for Best Play 2008-2009, and most recently, he directed the world premiere of Hugh Gross's Stated Income. LA Weekly named him their pick of the week and called him Howard Hoxian.
Very nice compliment, obviously. His current director.
Well, which actually comes with a little quick story, if I can throw it.
Sure.
I had told my wife, I said, you know, we're bound to get a difficult review once in a while and everything, because she had encouraged me to go back into directing. I had taken a little break, and she's reading it, and she goes, oh, no. Okay, sit down. And I said, why? She goes, because you got to, I'm going to tell you a review. I said, okay, so I got a bad review. So she goes, they called you Hoxian. And I said, was there a Howard in front of that?
Right.
and she said, yes. I said, that really wasn't that bad, believe me.
That's a pretty darn good compliment, Well, his current directing venture is The Dreamer Examines His Pillow, a philosophical dream comedy by John Patrick Shanley about love, marriage, and maturity. On stage now at the Hudson Main Stage Theater in Los Angeles through October 29th.
And he is here today to talk about that and much more with us. Please welcome the truly multi-talented Mark Blanchard.
Yeah. Welcome, my friend.
Can't get enough.
That Pacoima audience.
Yeah.
Wow.
You're very big in Pacoima, my friend. Very
I
big.
See.
There's fan pages
fantastic.
Set up all over. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing very well.
What an exciting project this sounds like.
Yeah, you know, of all the shows I've directed, and I think I'm on my 41st, this is definitely in the top three of just the most rewarding show that I've ever been involved in. And it's difficult because in a three-person show, that is a difficult subject, you know, in the fact that there's a lot of soul-searching going on.
No
and
doubt.
You may not think that it's that theatrical at that point, but oh my God, it is just, it's one hoot to one holler after the other, and it's every time you think you should laugh, then you're going, no, I better go the other direction with that one. And I actually think it's one of Shanley's best plays, John Patrick Shanley, mm-hmm. and it was one of his earliest plays, I think, and as I was mentioning to Andrew outside before, was that if you go in the wrong direction with the show, if you took it too comical or if you took it too serious, you're going to miss on both sides. If you mix the two and you find that there's an awful lot of levity, but at the other hand, there's also a lot of soul searching, and we have to find, like in life, the balance between two. You can't get too down in life, and you can't get too up, because you're going to go the other direction soon.
Sure.
So that's what the play does, and I think it does it very well. And my three actors, Scotty Thompson, Audie McCormick, and Sal Landy, are absolutely the three most talented actors I have ever seen together on one stage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The way they're working right now, it's just unbelievable. And being that you mentioned a show that I directed at the Met Theater, I've directed with quite an from Ed Harris to Amy Madigan to the whole Holly Hunter crew that was over there. And not to say that they're not some of the greatest actors alive, but in one space at one time. You know, Sal keeps saying, hey, do you want to do the understudy role? And I said, no, I don't want to go up. I don't want to miss 1 minute of watching the three of you on stage. I said, yes, I'm better than you, but we're not going to, you know. And that's, of course, a joke. But I don't want to. It's just, it's really remarkable to see. And at the end, which is what I think is the reason why I like it so much, is it's a different ride every night. Some nights it's darker than others. Some nights it's funnier. Some nights it's sadder. But every night I can see people going out of the audience saying, wow, that happened to me. Wow, wait a second. You know, and if you can do that in theater, I think that's really why theater is so absolutely powerful and important and was for a while losing its momentum around the planet, but coming back now, it's such a way to be able to instill thought process, you know, in people. And that's what I try to do in this show, and I think we're doing it very well.
So there is a dreamer, then, in particular?
There's two dreamers. There's one is lost in the fog of his nightmare, and that's the father. And then there's the dreamer trying to figure out his life, and that's the son or the boyfriend. And he's not a genetic son of this gentleman. I don't want to give the story away too mm-hmm. much, but he does call him son at one point or another. Mm-hmm. And then there's the girlfriend daughter, who's Scotty,
right.
And she's in the midst of this dream, and she's in the midst of the nightmare, and she's trying to figure it out, and she ends up in a dream sitting on the couch in a very sensual story of excitement, let's put it that way. And I have seen the audience. I've seen the audience squirming in their chairs in delight of what's going on.
It's worth the price of admission alone.
Right there. Right? And she's, well, you can see. I mean, you can't see here, but if you look her up,
yeah,
Scotty
she's a very attractive woman.
Your entire cast is a very good looking cast.
Not
it's nice they can act as well. So.
It's amazing. And actually, and that goes, the role of Tommy, who is the younger man, it's actually written as an Irish guy, and like a John Patrick Shanley, probably younger version of himself, maybe the age of him at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to this gentleman, I said, you're the one for the role. And he says, well, Mark, I'm from England. And I said, yes, I could tell. And he said, and I said, oh my God, you're black. Oh, really? You're black? He goes, oh, you noticed. I said, yeah, I noticed. And you're going to do the role. Are you sure I'm right? I said, you're going to do it, and you're going to keep your accent and do it, and it works spectacularly.
That's great. Awesome. Oh, that's cool. Awesome. You've gotten some remarkable notices. In particular, the Los Angeles Times says director Mark Blanchard gets powerhouse performances from his thoroughly engaging actors. It's just nice to know that the Los Angeles Times is out there seeing this kind of theater.
So important.
Yeah. Getting out there is important.
Yes.
And they don't get everywhere. It's hard to get
them. We can thank
them.
My publicist for that one.
Well, they don't throw compliments around lightly. Right.
No, not the compliment to get them there.
This is interesting, too, when you look at kind of where we're headed with theater. This is a dark show in a lot of ways. It's definitely got dark. But there's comedy in it as well. Yeah, I mean, there's certainly moments that are funny and make you want to laugh, if for no other reason than it's real life in a lot of ways, even though this is set in slightly surreal atmosphere. What was it like to direct something like that and try to play with those dark tones and those lighter moments and try to get that balance right?
Well, the first thing I did when I spoke to all three of the actors, I said, guys, there's going to be nights that you get hysterical laughs, and there's going to be nights that you don't get a laugh. And it's exactly because of what you just said, Andrew, is that it's dark and it's funny at the same time. And I said, if you play for the laughs, you will sink this show the first night it goes on. If you don't, and you stay with what is really happening and you stay with the life experiences, you're going to get laughs from people that did the same thing, cheating, whatever it is that you're darker than cheating, whatever it is that you've gone through, and they're going to laugh in an uncomfortable fashion. But you're going to go with that. Yeah. Or they're going to see this situation that you learned your lesson and they're going to laugh hysterically because they learned it. But you cannot play for that. And that's something I've been in my directing career throughout. I've never allowed people to ever sing for the bigger note or act for the special moment or this. I just said you have to be real. Speak your voice in every single thing, and that's when you'll get the laughter. And sometimes, of course, if I'm in the audience, I laugh like at everything, which is ridiculous because I can see out of the corner that no one else gets it, but I can see all three of them at one point. He's here.
They know immediately. Very funny.
Boy, oh boy. So, and as Presnell say, full of rich symbolism and magical realism and emotional intensity about love, marriage, and maturity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And the way that I had the lighting designer Donnie Jackson light it was completely unrealistic type of a lighting, yet absolutely I would say unrealistic realistically. So, and what I'm meaning by that is, like, no, you wouldn't have blue lights and red lights coming at you in certain moments, but the darkness of where you're living is the light that you're in, and there and that. The lightness of where you go to is the light that you're in life, and you go for that. And he did that a beautiful job. And it's very sparse, the stage. I won't describe it exactly, but the color of the stage is the cast, is their performances, and John Patrick's words. Maybe I did my job too. We'll see how you think about that.
It sounds like you definitely did. Yeah, and obviously, this show isn't done very much around here, correct? Do you remember when the last production in Los Angeles was?
No. Sal actually said he saw one maybe 10 years ago, and that's the last he can remember. Wow. And he, like myself, are avid theater goers involved in the theater at the time. And so, no, I don't think it was done very much. I mean... If I was a director, oh my God, I am.
Funny how that works out.
Wow. But if, in fact, I was offered this, I would take a step back at first to see, because of the type of show it is and because it could be considered verbose and in ways and everything. But his words are so beautiful that even when they're speaking dark subjects, if you go with it and you get involved in it and you dream the dream, Ade is in three moments where he's specifically in the dream in the character, which is the Tommy character. And we worked on that a long time. And after he threw out his Macbeth performance of it and came into the he's just, he's so good each night that just to see a moment that may come up from him, and this is true of all three of them, actually, there's going to be a moment where you're just like, oh my God, in every single performance, it's worth it just for that.
It's great.
But, it's pretty, I mean, I'm proud, as you can tell.
Yeah.
I think.
I want to ask you, which I frequently ask all of our guests, when did you know as a young man or as a child that you had any sort of interest in the arts?
Well, I knew I had interest in the arts way back in the 70s, which I don't want to know, maybe the 60s, the 70s, let's go 70s, in the 70s, when my father took me to musicals in New York. And even though my father was very strict, right-wing type individual, he loved the arts. And underneath his heart was bleeding left the whole time, which is probably why I sit in the center from all that, and my mother being a hippie and my father being, right, they didn't last. But my mother's still around, my father's somewhere out in space. But I think that's what got going with it. And then I never, ever thought of it to do it. And then I got hurt playing football in college. And I was, at that point, still majoring in medicine, but minoring in political science. And then I said, no, I'm going to major now in theater out of blue. And of course, my father took away the money for school. I had to get scholarship to help pay for it, and all, which I did. And then I got hurt. And then I was at the Long Island Shakespeare Festival when I was in a play, Midsummer's Night Dream, and playing Puck. and floating around and having fun, and said, "Hey, I like this." And then I realized later on, and it was Herbert Berghoff who said it. He said, "You know, you're a director." And I said, "What do you mean? I'm a really good actor." And he said, "You're a director." Huh. You know, and I said, "Okay, but I'm still, you're a good actor. You're a director." And he kept saying it to me and everything. And I said, "Okay, I believe you. What do I do?" And that's when I changed everything.
Really?
And started. Yeah. And which is funny because Uta, well, on the other hand, at one point was talking about sense memory, which is Uta Hagen.
Yes,
and
of course.
She was talking about sense memory, and she used me, and she goes, "And like what you just saw Mark did in this scene, he used this sense memory and all this." And I said, "I don't know what that blank sense memory is. All I do is stand here and try to be honest." And she goes, "Oh, no, that's not true." And I said, "Well, okay, I understand sense memory. I don't know. I still to this day don't. But I do understand trying to be accurate and coming from the bottom of us, and that's what I try to instill in the actors."
Well, it sounds like it definitely comes through. The name of the show, ladies and gentlemen, is The Dreamer Examines His Pillow. And this show, of course, has already opened. You opened on the 6th, I believe, of October. Is that correct?
You did.
Yes, we opened on the 6th of October. This run, we opened in September, late August for the beginning of the run, and then we moved to the Hudson, which is absolutely such a beautiful
great
space.
Great place.
It is.
Yeah. Guys, and, of course, it runs through October 29th of this year, of course. And it's on the Hudson Main Stage Theater, which, as we've said, is such a beautiful space, located at 6539 Santa Monica Boulevard here in Los Angeles, 90038.
And for tickets, ladies and gentlemen, you can go to plays411.com/dreamer. And they are beautifully affordable at $25. Mm-hmm. Can't beat that.
However, if you guys do it this weekend before you go down there and you put in the code 10ME, you're going to get $10 off that thing because you're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Nice. Sweet.
Which I'm trying to promote that as well as... You
that's
know,
10ME, correct?
10ME,
cool.
Yes.
10ME,
and that would be for performances Friday night, tomorrow night, and Saturday night at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 7 p.m.,
yes,
right?
But you have to do that because you listen to the show and from before. You can't do that at the door.
All right. Great.
Well, remember that, cool. Folks. See, now, we make it easy for you to get to the theater, to put down those remotes, get away from that television set, and go out and enjoy live performances.
That's right. And the Hudson obviously has lots of good restaurants around there as well, so you can kind of make it a night out.
They have two right at the theater.
Right,
yeah, there's
right,
a coffee shop that actually serves food in the theater,
yeah,
and then right next to it is another restaurant, which is also part of the whole complex.
Yeah.
It's just a beautiful night. And the theater, you know, is so, so important. I'm sitting next to a performer here that I heard it in his voice singing, which they're going to announce in a minute. I don't want to tip the hat. So, but I can see him smiling as we're speaking because you feel it. It's something that's so
palpable.
It's so impalpable, mm-hmm, and so important in society to keep out there and see the arts live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I direct film. I directed both my daughters, Rowan Blanchard and Carmen Blanchard, in a film that I'm finishing called The World Away. I direct film,
mm-hmm,
and I've directed commercials and television, and I don't like it as much as theater, except for the paycheck. But you know, that's the only part of it I do because of this. Because you know, and a lot of times in directing film or television, I won't try to ever say, "Let's take this cut." I just say, "Roll cameras, let's go," and just we keep going and keep going, like theater, because I think that's where the real love is.
And in theater, of course, it's very magical because there are never two performances alike.
Well, that's just it. You know, live theater, there's an alchemy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And only the people who are in there actually experience it. I talk about this at the end of my show, which you'll hear on Sunday.
Yeah.
But basically, the people who actually are part of the mix, because the audience is very much
absolutely, they're another character.
You do. Right. They are another character, mm-hmm, even if you're doing a solo show. They're mm-hmm very much a character. And as I like to say at the end of the show, it's something, it's a moment shared only between the people who are, to steal a phrase, in the room where it happened.
Yeah, very nice Hamilton reference.
In The Dreamer, there's an actual, and I won't give it away, but there's an actual contact with the audience as well in John Patrick Shanley's writing and all. And it's so embraced every single night, no matter what it is, because of how it's brought about. And I don't want to give the in a way, but cool. It is there. So yes, and that so the audience is the actor at that moment.
Well, you've been listening to Mark Blanchard, and the name of the show again that he directed is an unknown show, but really a wonderful piece of theater by a great author. The name of the show is The Dreamer Examines His Pillow. So we'd encourage you to Google that, find out, go down to the Hudson and see this show, particularly around Halloween. It's a little bit surrealistic. It's got some kind of fun themes, a little bit darker humor, and I think you'll have a really good time with this project. So. Yeah. Mark, thank you. Can you hang around with us for a little bit?
Please do.
Sure.
Keep on chatting.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate it very much. Cool. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for our live arts calendar, and for the second play of season number 36, North Coast Rep is reviving John Steinbeck's classic drama novella turned into a play of Mice and Men, the play that electrified the opening night audiences at the Music Box Theater in 1937.
Now, 80 years later, the story of these two iconic figures, Lenny and George, continues to be a part of our country's collective imagination, a tale of friendship in a world of solitude that is sustained by illusory dreams. I'm sorry, I said that so incorrectly, didn't I?
No, I think that's fine. Illusory dreams is
illusory.
Illusory dreams right. Is absolutely right, and that is, of course, this show, which is so amazingly written and so beautiful. Labeled a masterpiece by Time Magazine and powerfully moving by the Wall Street Journal, Of Mice and Men is a must-see theater piece for all those who treasure timeless, compelling storytelling.
Indeed, it is. Performances are Wednesday at 7 p.m., Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 p.m., Saturday and Sunday matinees at 2 p.m., and Sundays at 7 p.m. through November 12th. $20 rush tickets are available a half hour before performances, if they are available.
That's right. What a good deal that is, too.
Fantastic.
This is a must-see theater piece, and you cannot afford to miss it. For more information, we'd encourage you to visit performingartslive.com or call 858-481-1055. Or, of course, you can visit northcoastrep.org to purchase your tickets.
Absolutely. Such an exciting show, and what a great opportunity to see great theater. And now we will turn our attention to another tremendous talent, experienced and respected in theater from one coast to the other. Our next guest has made a name for himself as a remarkably versatile actor and singer.
He trained at Temple University and the Juilliard School, and he's equally at home in repertory on Broadway or in front of a camera.
An admitted character actor from his early years and blessed with a rich lyric baritone of effortless range, he has been described as an absolutely natural all-around leading man, garnering epithets for his work that lean from raucous and hilariously deadpan all the way to emotionally intense and broodingly dark.
Mm-hmm. He starred in the Los Angeles premieres of Sondheim's Sunday in the Park with George and Chess, and the West Coast premieres of Legacy of Light and Romance. His 2017 Sondheim concert performances include the roles of Ben in Follies and Frederick in A Little Night Music.
He debuted a Bernstein aria never heard before in performance in the Bernstein Peter Pan. He also appeared in the celebrated Jason Robert Brown, Alfred Uri, Opus Parade, a remarkable show, which was here in Los Angeles at the Mark Taper Forum, the Don Marr production from London. He has had the honor of sharing the stage with such luminaries as Carol Burnett, Leslie Uggams, Herschel Bernardi, and Theodore Bekel. He has been fortunate enough to work under the direction of the great Jerome Robbins. He can also proudly count himself as one of Sid Charisse's dance partners.
Mm. A true triple threat, his other talents include work in numerous accents, opera, folk guitar, piano, saxophone, stage combat, sports fencing, and horsemanship. My goodness, I'm tired just reading everything you've done, my friend.
So am I.
He is also the voice of God, and that's where I wanted to end your bio. He's just the voice of God. But he's the voice of God at the LA Stage Alliance's annual Ovation Awards ceremony, and just debuted his new solo cabaret act, Opening Doors, in August of 2017.
And at this point, Andrew, why don't we let our audience have a taste of this man's voice.
Oh, what a
voice.
Treat they're in for here, my goodness.
Yeah. Now let's set up the song.
Keep in mind, he has a very soft and reserved way of performing.
He's ladies a little and shy on radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, Robert Yacko, and what song is this?
The song is from Follies.
It was actually only in the London production of Follies, I think in the 80s. Mm-hmm. It took the place of a song that normally is at the end. It's Ben's Breakdown, which normally is Live, Laugh, Love. This is called Make the Most of Your Music. And as you will hear in the lyrics, it's about about composing music.
And this is a live performance take, is that correct?
From That's last right. year cool. at yeah. the Federal.
Sterling upstairs at the Federal. Yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Yourself. By the way you conduct yourself, you don't have to disclose yourself. Compose yourself. Find your cue, set your key, clear the loon it may never be. Make the most of the music that is yours. If your range isn't great, you can change it, just modulate.
Wow. And that is just a little taste of what you're going to hear on
That's
Sunday
half of
night.
That song.
That's half of the song. Well, we are so happy to have him here with us today to talk about his illustrious career, as well as his latest venture, Opening Doors, a unique, fun, and joyous journey through a life on the stage in story and song. Sunday, October 29th at 7 p.m., held at Sterling's upstairs at the Federal. Please welcome the incomparable Robert Yacko.
Yeah.
Can we have these people at my show on Sunday?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I think that they're responding so positively to the music they just heard. But even more than that, I got to tell you, your voice just immediately grabs you, and I think that's been given by you were in Chess, which is one of my favorite musicals that's not done very often as well. Who did you play in that? And what was your experience with that show?
Well, it was extraordinary. It's actually one of my favorite contemporary scores. You know, it was written by the two guys from ABBA.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the lyricist from Evita.
Mm-hmm.
I played Anatoly, the Russian chess champion, opposite Jody Benson, who was the voice of Little Mermaid. Yeah.
Wow, wonderful.
And it was an extraordinary production. It's one of my favorite things. I mean, you know, I get to sing Anthem, which is one of those monster tunes.
Right. What an epic song.
Oh, yeah. And it closes the first act, and you just go, okay, I'm done. But, And of course, that's Sunday in the Park, that photo.
I know.
Right. But that was, there was a wonderful theater that sadly doesn't exist anymore. It was the Long Beach Civic Light Opera, and I did some extraordinary work down there. My first production was the LA premiere of Sunday in the Park, mm-hmm. which was a gift. It was supposed to be Barry Bostwick and Pamela Myers.
My goodness.
And Barry was in the middle of filming his second George Washington miniseries with Patty Duke, and he basically said, I can't do this, I don't have the time. And they couldn't find another name, as it were, who could handle the material. And it's very difficult, and it's very specific, because once they hired Mandy in New York, Stephen started writing for Mandy's.
Mandy Patinkin, we're talking about.
Yes, yeah. Mandy Patinkin's, a very specific voice.
Right.
And for some reason, I just happened to have that, a similar set of quirks, a different voice, but definitely a similar. I mean, I have that falsetto you need for George. And also, because of, I was trained primarily as an actor, not as a singer. oddly enough.
Interesting.
But when you start to learn that other craft, you suddenly are doing musicals. The really nice thing about my older years now is that I'm pretty much doing half and half. I'm doing half straight plays, half musicals. Last year at this time, I was in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom at the Taper.
Wow.
Really, you know, an extraordinary experience.
Yeah.
And I covered Arthur Miller's The Price there. I covered both brothers.
Great show.
Which
great
is, show. You know, with Kate Burton and Alan Mandel. And it was just really extraordinary. But so it's a really nice to have a mix now.
Yeah, but I mean, you said that you were trained really as an actor as opposed to a singer. Did you know that you could sing?
Well, I would say, you know, you were asking Mark about where everything started. And
right.
I talk a little bit about this in my show in that I started with music because my mother's side of the family was Irish. Her maiden name was Mary Louise Gilligan, daughter of Thomas Edward and Minerva May. And you know, when the Irish
it's as Irish
culture,
as it gets.
It's right. You're from the northern shores up in Antrim, you know. You know, music is such a huge part of that culture.
Yeah.
And it is the way men are encouraged to express their emotion.
No doubt, yeah.
So my grandfather, who was a kind of a tough Navy man with a giant anchor tattoo, a shock of white hair, and spent his entire life smoking unfiltered cigarettes,
wow.
still had a gorgeous Irish tenor.
Wow.
And anytime we visited down on the South Jersey shores at Wildwood, after dinner, we would go out and catch dinner on his boat. Come home, Mom and Grandma would cook it up, and then my grandfather would sit down at the piano at night and just sing away at his favorite Irish tunes.
My goodness.
And he wasn't doing it to entertain us. He just loved to sing. It's just part of that culture.
That's when it's at its best.
So music was my beginning. And I did actually start doing musicals in high school, but then I got into the acting thing. And, you know, when you're accepted at Juilliard, it's a pretty intense program. And the odd thing about being at Juilliard in fact, you know, Juilliard just celebrated its 50th anniversary of the drama division.
Wow.
Didn't know that.
I had a big celebration just a couple of weeks ago. And my whole class has been reconnected. It's really fascinating. And one of the gentlemen in my class was Boyd Gaines, by the way.
Wow.
You know Boyd. He's got a couple of Tonys under his belt.
Nice to have.
Damn it.
But the funny thing about being at Juilliard at that time is we were in the drama program. We had zero music.
Wow.
I know.
Wow.
We're in a music school. What are you thinking?
My goodness. No collaborations with the music department or anything?
No.
Oh, my
no.
goodness.
Now, of course, you would make extra money by working props for
of
the operas.
Yeah.
And you'd see some really obscure stuff. And you got to know the musicians. And we had this huge party at the end of one year. And they got, you know, jazz was a real no-no there because it's such a classical school.
Yeah.
It's not so much now.
Wow.
But somebody managed to get, for this big party at the end of the year, put together a Juilliard jazz band, and they got one of Duke Ellington's old sax players to lead them. And I'm telling you,
wow.
hearing them play Walking Up the Stairs from Pearly would just blow your mind.
Wow.
Yeah, just incredible musicianship. So.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. So,
and I was, you know, blessed later on to really almost by happenstance be led to an incredible teacher in New York, a woman named Laura Thomas, who we just lost this year. She's got to be close to 90. She and Barbara Cook were contemporaries.
Hmm.
They studied with the same man, and when I talked to Barbara, she said, oh, my God, I still go to Laura for lessons every now and then.
Wow.
But she would train people for the Met and Broadway, and I think that's where I not only took my voice and speech training out of Juilliard, but then added the music back.
So this was well after school, after graduation?
I would say a couple of years after graduation.
Okay. Yeah. And you really started to hone your voice. And your first professional singing jobs, where did those come from? Did you just go on auditions after you kind of started training your voice?
I was a bad child. I was in the union before I went to Juilliard. I did some children's theater in Philly. I toured the music fair circuit.
Wow.
And it was insane because you were doing an original music per every week.
My goodness.
A lot of them were like stolen melodies with different lyrics, but I mean, you would throw them together in 4 days and do it in three different venues in Philly, Baltimore, and Washington.
It's like a crash course.
Oh.
Two-a-days in football, man.
It was bad.
Wow.
It just reminded me of
that's right.
That.
But we all do stuff like that. So I would say that was probably my first professional gig. Once I got out, my first almost Broadway show was a revival of Hair.
Wow.
And they gave, it was four auditions. They actually gave me tickets to see the show, and they were waiting to see if they were going to extend, and they didn't. Huh. They, just as they were about to hand me a contract, they...
The original Hair on Broadway?
It was on Broadway. It was a revival.
The revival. The original, my cousin Paul Jabaro, who passed of AIDS, would say...
I know Paul.
He was in that, and he wrote... that song, Last Dance.
Totally.
Won the Oscar for it.
Well, but of course, as all things happen, that almost a Broadway debut led to a Broadway debut a year later, or actually 2 years later, but the job that then led to me, which was the national tour and then Broadway production of Fiddler on the Roof with Herschel Bernardi.
Amazing.
Beautiful. And Maria Karnilova came back for the Broadway run, who she's the original Golda. And of course, we had Mr. Robbins for both tours.
Yeah.
And it was extraordinary.
And my friend, who was Mr. Bernardi's son, Michael Bernardi,
of course, yes.
Just did the show on Broadway in its most recent revival.
Right.
And he's really not a singer, but he is he's certainly a very good actor and sings, you know, appropriately.
Can you tell me about Opening Doors and where the concept for this show kind of came from and what audiences are going to see when they swarm Sterling's upstairs at the Federal this coming Sunday?
Well, you know, it's so funny. For a long time, people said, you have to do your own show. And, of course... As I say, I actually have a couple of pieces that I put together out of Sondheim, and part of it is a reworked Opening Doors from Merrily We Roll Along.
Okay.
But it's very much about the fact that, you know, you look back over your history, because that's what people want to hear. They want to hear the stories of, I mean, you said at the end of my bio that I was one of Sidgery's dance partners. And it was really the quirkiest little thing.
I'm sure that must have been such a wild experience.
She was 62.
Wow.
It was a summer stock production. It was not even a musical. It was Abe Burrows' Cactus Flower. And I was playing the young writer, Igor Sullivan, from The Village. And she was playing Stephanie the Cactus Flower. And because our characters danced together in the second act nightclub scene to make our significant others jealous, they made it a number.
Did she still have those legs?
She, let me tell you. I'm 6'2", and she could stand in front of me and still throw that leg
still
up.
Still
throw
it over
my goodness.
And
Michael can do that too if you want. He'll show you after the show.
Yeah.
So well, a little known tip.
Money involved. It
doesn't come out well on the radio.
I think we ought to leave that alone.
But I can do it, but only once.
But she herself taught me the dance because she had done the play once already.
Wow.
And I had to go to a dance studio with Sidgery's alone to have her teach me, and I couldn't sleep the night before.
I'm sure.
Going, this woman's dance with Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire.
Wow.
Now she's dancing with me.
Wow.
She could not have been lovelier. And I do talk a little bit about a little moment during Tech Dress when we hadn't danced under any... We had danced under all the tech and, except for the lighting. And the lighting was a little dim, so just as we went into... And she's in one of her Bob Mackie gowns.
Wow.
Slid up to here, looking like $1 million, you know. And she leans into me just as the lights go down. And she goes... Because she would get up on a table and she'd jump into my arms at one point in the
goodness.
Dance.
Wow.
You know.
Yeah. Don't drop her, please. Well, no pressure.
She leaned into me and she said, stay close to the table. I don't see too well.
Oh, no.
Had a minor heart attack.
Right.
And, you know, there's other incredible stories, like which I don't tell in my show, about there was a moment. We're in the round. I had an entrance maybe a half page after her, so I'm standing behind her. And she wasn't real huggy-kissy, but she was wearing sort of a strapless thing. And she said, could you, and I'm standing behind her, she said, could you rub my shoulder? She trusted me as her dance partner. And I said, sure. I got to the middle, right next to her spine, right up near her shoulder. And there was like a rock in there.
Oh, my goodness.
She said, do you feel that? And I said, yeah, what is it? She said, I had polio when I was 5, and my parents didn't know.
Oh, my goodness.
Out of her own mouth, I heard this.
Wow.
And she still became Sidgery.
I've never heard that mentioned anywhere before. I mean, that's such
I don't know if it's in her book, but...
Wow.
I mean,
it's out there now.
We just heard it.
I know.
Wow. Well, yeah. Breaking news here on State of the Arts, ladies and gentlemen. That's so... And obviously, what an accomplishment for her to overcome that and do what she did just
amazing.
In the physical form, let alone the art that she contributed. Wow. That's amazing.
God.
When I was a waiter, I used to wait on her at this very exclusive restaurant that I worked at. And her husband, Tony Martin...
Uh-huh.
was off in the restaurant singing at the top of his lungs.
Wow.
He'd always have just a little bit too much to drink when that happened. But she was, you know, just let him do it, and she and everybody loved it in the restaurant.
Tough to complain about that, yeah.
You have a wonderful director for your show, Bruce Kimmel.
Yeah.
Who's
we just, love, absolutely.
Yeah, we love him to death, and he's got a new show that he's coming up.
Levi.
Directing Levi, yes, and which is the story about the German immigrant, Mr. Mm-hmm. Levi Strauss, and his success upon coming to this country with Levi jeans.
And, of course, Albie Potts is musical directing this. Obviously a great place. We talk so much about the Federal Bar because we love the Federal Bar. You can go there. You can get great food, great drinks. Mm-hmm. And this really is, of course, one night only this coming Sunday. You go there. You get a great meal. You sit down, and you have a great performance coming up after that. How many seats are available for a show like that, Michael?
A little over 100.
So it's tough to get a seat for most of these shows. But people can get tickets by calling right now. If you go to Brown Paper Tickets and just visit Sterling's upstairs on Brown Paper Tickets. You can type that in. But, Michael, I always like people to call the number, the 1-800 number. It's a great way to do it.
800-838-3006, extension 1. The nice part about this, ladies and gentlemen, is they have the most courteous live customer service reps for 24/7.
Well, that may be
the
most.
You always get somebody in the middle of the night. You say, oh, my God, I need to buy that ticket. I didn't do it. They're going to be there to help you.
It may be the best part about calling that number, but the best part about this show is the price. This is really an amazing price. There's a $20 cover charge and then $15 per person food and or beverage minimum. And I got to tell you, man, it is just really great food. The Vanilla Manhattan, I think I would die for. It's just about as good as it gets. So, and obviously a great performer, too. This is a fun visit and a great way to relax before you have to deal with the trick-or-treaters, which are coming up.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Lots of good stuff coming up.
Absolutely.
I think we need to do something to these two gentlemen.
It's that time, I think.
And now, embarrassing moments.
It's another voice from God. My goodness. Embarrassing Moments is our segments where we ask performers such as yourself who have been so seasoned and reached such great heights to tell us maybe one of their lower and more embarrassing moments where they almost quit and walked away, so we can encourage our young performers who listen out there that things do go wrong and you can get through them and life does get better and the show must go on. Anybody got one?
Mark?
I do have one. I had a different one, and I'm going to go with this one instead because
last minute audible.
I just called an audible. Okay, so because I had not been involved in theater at this point, and I was in college, my first 6 months of college, I was at Franklin Pierce in New Hampshire, in Ringe, New Hampshire, mm-hmm. and it was the same year. Which I think was 79, basically that Rocky Horror Picture Show, the movie, got famous and you know, started to become big.
Huge.
And I saw it once down at the Rad in Boston, and I thought, oh, my God, this is wonderful. Well, my friends talked me into doing Frank Furter because I had good legs, you know, which is what we were talking about. They were awfully hairy, but they were good. So I shaved my legs, and they did it in front of the movie, you know, screen. And I had never done anything on stage before, so I didn't know what I was doing. And I'm not really the singer by any means that Robert is sitting next to me. I can carry a tune like the guy you were talking about. My daughters are the singers. I'm not. But anyway, you're supposed to mime it. I didn't know that.
No.
So come the Frankenfurter part coming out at the very first, and I start bursting into the song, and everyone in the audience I can see who's watching the movie is like, I don't know if that's supposed to happen. And I was missing the notes. And finally, the girl that was playing Magenta kind of punched me in the back. And I held it over my head, and that was the end of that. So I think that was probably my most embarrassing moment, and it did keep me from probably going back to stage for quite some time because it was like 2 more years before I went back up again. But kids, listen, no matter what, you're going to find a moment. You're going to throw up as you're stepping out on the stage. Oh. You're going to fall down. You're going to drop something that doesn't go where it is. That's the beauty of live theater.
That's
Just let it happen and continue it. That's what makes it so special.
No doubt about it. Robert, you got anything for us?
Oh, God, no. All my years?
I've been perfect for
everything. I've been nine. Hello, hello. It's like that old John Lovitz thing, you know, to be your nine. Actually, mine, when I thought about it, is an audition situation. I was sent at a couple of last-minute auditions out here One was for Kiss of the Spider Woman, which was last minute, and literally down the street, there were the two Screenland studios. Down the street was the tour of Sound of Music. Mm. And I got the information from them both so fast and furious. And I tried to prep for this stuff, and I knew exactly what I needed to sing for Sound of Music. And the only thing I got wrong was the director... of the tour was Susan Shulman, and I got her name in my head. I got it mixed up with Susan Stroman. They are two completely different people. Now, the bad part of this is Susan Shulman had directed the original Secret Garden on Broadway, which I had done three productions of as Archie in the Mandy Patinkin role, of course. And I'd actually had a little odd run-in with her in New York. I had gone in to, audition for a replacement for Mandy, and she didn't want to see me. And I was like, I flew myself in.
Right.
So somewhere, I think, it's subconsciously in the back of my head, I just flipped them. So after I sing, and it goes really well, she's all excited, and she looks at my resume, and she says, oh, tell me about the production of Secret Garden. And there had been some changes that this director made, and I said... And I actually said to her, I said, you know, because it never made sense to me that the Indian ghosts follow her to England. And, of course, it went completely over my head until my agent called me and said, you will not be getting a call back.
Oh, my goodness.
And I said, why? He said, because you said that to Susan Shulman. He said, you were right, but don't say that to the director. And I was like, oh, my God, I thought it was Susan Stroman. A
couple letters took you out of the part, man.
So,
I tell you.
I didn't get the job, but it didn't damage my career. Funny. You just pay attention to the details, and you'll be fine.
Well, and at least you said something that you honestly believe. I think she had to respect that you had the gumption to say it. So.
See, I would have given you the job.
All right, that's exactly right. You know, I hated that too. I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. Oops. Well,
we told you about some great shows here today, including The Dreamer Examines His Pillow. Easiest way to get tickets for The Dreamer Examines His Pillow is to visit plays411.com/dreamer. This is a good dark piece that's got some really fun themes to it.
It's a surrealistic.
Yeah, it's a dramedy, and it's definitely got that Halloween vibe, I think, that is such a pleasurable thing to see.
Lit for Halloween, and don't forget 10 Me's, 10 ME.
That's
so
right.
Get your $10 off.
Running now through October 29th at the Hudson Main Stage, obviously a great piece of theater. And we don't want to forget to tell you about the great Robert Yacko as he performs Opening Doors one night only, Sunday, October 29th, 7 p.m. At Sterling's upstairs at the Federal, one of our favorite venues. Michael, what's the best way for people to get tickets again?
You know, simply go to brownpapertickets.com and put in Robert's name, Robert Yacko. Go, and it will come up and give you the opportunity to purchase, or you can call 24/7 800-838-3006 extension 1 and have a lovely, courteous customer service representative
to
help you.
Of course, John Steinbeck's of Mice and Men is playing at North Coast Rep. Obviously, a great production. You can visit performingartslive.com to visit there and find out about that and many other great things, including Dark Heart of Poe, which is opening this weekend as well.
So yay.
Lots of good stuff going on around the season. That's right. Wow. Gentlemen, we cannot say thank you enough for being here. What a cool thing.
Absolutely.
So glad to have you guys. Michael, where do I see you again next week?
On the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.